This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
You are the key element of your classroom. It is upon you on which everything in your classroom will turn. Your classroom culture will not be the same as your co-teachers. It might have the same flavor, but maybe not exactly the same shape. You are not predestined to capitulating to the lowest common denominator in your classroom. And neither does a strong, positive school culture guarantee your classroom to be a strong classroom culture. Cultures do not lead, leaders lead. If the culture is leading, then you as the leader are only managing. And so, if cultures don't lead, and you want to be more than a manager, then you will need to lead. It follows, doesn't it? Classroom culture is not a competition to see which of us can have the perfect culture. We are working with people. And people, yourselves and myself included, are messy. Classroom culture, a strong classroom culture, is best achieved through a team effort of each of the classrooms. When we can go in the confidence that we know our staff team, we know the others, we know their heart, we know what they want, we know what we want as a school together, when we know that we're for each other, I can more easily fit into the culture of the school where it's a strong, positive culture. And we said yesterday that thinking carefully about how we create a culture of joy and rigor will provide that necessary context for teachers to teach and students to learn. I also want to just say here in the opening that all week I've been leading up to my favorite part, which is tomorrow. Because the heart of what I've been driving at all week happens tomorrow's session. So hang with me yet here today. You're brave to have done this the third day in a row. One of the places that we need to pay attention to in our classrooms are the things that we do. We need to pay attention to our actions. What do you as a teacher do? What do your students do? What are the rhythms of your classrooms? Now, we have considered this week briefly. We have done a flyover, certainly not gone down nearly as deeply as we could have. But we have looked at the convergence of beliefs and attitudes and values in the classroom. And it's difficult, it's hard to get our heads wrapped around this. I've come upon various conversations where you're trying to wrap your head around, well, why is this? It's a good exercise. It's important to try. It's important to try. Less nuanced, but maybe almost as important, are the rituals and traditions that you have in your classroom. The things that you do, the routines that you have. The shape, the color, the tone, and the timbre of your classroom is deeply influenced by the rituals and traditions of your classroom. They speak loudly into what the culture is like. It informs the culture. It also reveals the culture. And so I'd like to begin with a few definitions here. Routines. Routines are the things that we do every day to make sure that our classroom is running efficiently. it allows our classroom to run on autopilot at some level, so we don't have to expend unnecessary energy on the small things that really can essentially take care of themselves. Some of you actually have to. So I'm home from junior high. I'm in the classroom just not almost half the time. But even when I'm in the classroom, once in a while, you know, a parent needs to see me. I have to stop what I'm doing and I have to walk out. What happens? What happens? I can tell you stories on both sides of this equation. The more interesting ones are the disasters, of course. But it was drilled home to me the importance of good routine. When one day I had a prospective parent who wanted to send their child to our school, dropped by the school, and I knew he was going to come sometime. It was a dad. He actually happened to be a knee surgeon, one of the finest in the country, I'm told. Interns come into Meadville, of all places, to work with this doctor. And he, you know, I didn't know all this about him, but you know, so I'm Dr. So-and-so, and we're looking at sending our child. And being a humble Mennonite, my heart skips a beat. It's like, oh boy, I don't know if we can handle this. And yet I kind of wanted to see if, could we serve a family like that who deeply cares about education? If you spend 8 years getting an education, you care about that, don't you? Could we ever even serve that kind of? So I'm kind of excited. I wonder what could happen here. Wonderful Christian family. He stops by at 10:56 in the morning. I happen to be in my science class right then. And the secretary is walking to the hallway bringing this man, and I'm teaching, and I see her at the door. She opens the door a little bit, and I say, okay, I have a guest, and who is this? And I step back out, and I meet him. And he said, do you have a few minutes to talk? I said, you know, I'm teaching a class here. Yes, I'd like to talk with you. Tell you what, give me a second here. I'll get these guys going, and then we'll talk. So I step back and say, okay, guys, here's your assignment. And I spent a minute or two, and I said, now you guys know what you need to do. And I walked out. Now, all of a sudden, my heart is going pitter-patter, pitter-patter, pitter-patter. What in the world? I now have 18 students by themselves. Ending bell coming shortly. I wonder how this is all going to work. And so we sat down in my office and we talked and had a good conversation. It was a fairly short meeting. It was probably, 20 minutes. We get done. And he was just an opening introduction to each other. And we get done and he said, I'd like to see your classroom in action. I thought, oh, Jesus. Would you mind taking care of this for me? I said, sure, come on. You know how you do? Sure, come on. Let's go. So we walk down the hallway. And my heart said, this will be okay. Not everything else was cooperating with that. And I was feeling this. I'm like, oh. And I could point to a few students that I knew could have potentially turned the thing into chaos. Jesus knew about that too. So we walked to the classroom, and I just decided that we might as well see it for what it is. And I said, well, why don't you come here, and we'll just stand out here. So we stood at the window, and we looked. And they had gotten into their groups, and they were not finished with their homework. The bell had rung, but they weren't finished, and so they didn't know what else to do but to keep going. And so they kept going, and they were all working in groups. It's a happy hubbub, a buzz. And I opened the door a little bit, and there was people on task. Now, it rarely happened that year that way, but that day it did. And he said, who was in here with them? I said, well, nobody. I said, I teach this class, so I met with you, and now, you know, I'm coming back to see what we have here. And I chuckled nervously. And he said, I want my child here. That's what I want. It sold it right there in that one moment. Was that because I was such a great teacher? No. You know what that was about? Students knowing what to do. The ability to have routines that weren't heavy and thick and and await, but that you know what to do. I trust you. Go ahead. You know what your groups are. Do it. You know what the routines are. And, you know, in my heart, I'm thinking, you better do it. It's more fun to tell that story than the other stories, okay? Because it's not more fun to listen to, but because the disasters are always fun to listen to, it seems like. I don't know why, because we all can relate to those. But you see, I felt the power of the routine. The idea that the things that we do every day, the procedures that we put in place, these actually count. They matter. They influence culture, and they're also a result of the culture in your classroom. Students feel very secure when they know the routines. It ensures that the days follow a pattern. And students will, you know how students are, they will say, oh, we want to do something different. And when you do something different, why do we have to do this? It's different. They're conflicted. They love to know what's coming. Teachers have routines too, such as a cup of coffee in the morning. There's the informal routines, or more, if you're like some of you. Certainly not me. At least a cup of coffee in the morning. That's an informal routine. And when you come down in the morning, you have routines, right? When we come to the school, you greet each other certain ways. Or you have certain ways you go about going to your classroom, right? We all work off routine. Routines, the things we do every day, they matter. They matter. But I'd like to camp not on the routines. That's a little bit more classroom management 101, if you will. We just all ought to have those things in place. What I'd like to talk with you about are rituals and traditions. Rituals are processes or daily routines that are infused with deeper meaning. And they're all connected to the values you have for your classroom. Another way of saying that is this: the more public routines that become expressions of your values and beliefs. A routine can be made a ritual if it represents a strong value to you. If you have trouble getting students there late in the morning, you can take a typical routine and you can ramp it up to ritual level, and you have a tool by which to shape the culture of your classroom where it is no fun. Mom, I've got to get to school on time. Every morning they do this and this, and I want to be there. The routine gets ramped up a notch into a ritual. It's got a little more of a public expression. It's not just about how we turn our papers in, but it's because we're doing handstands while we're turning our papers in. That would be more of a ritual, maybe. I don't recommend it. I'm making a point. The routines can become more of a ritual, more of a public expression, a bigger deal. I'll be coming back to both of these in a moment. Then traditions are significant events that have special history and meaning and occur year in and year out in your classroom. The word ceremony fits into this category. On a school level, you can more easily detect it. A ceremony is a special kind of tradition, right? You have programs. Your graduations, those are ceremonies. That takes tradition at a deeper level yet, because that is a very public expression of significance. And so I'd like to come back then to rituals. Why rituals? And I hope you understand my use of the word ritual. This is not some pagan form of worship or something. Okay, you all have rituals, you do, and you have routines, and you would have a hard time living without those. I'm going to ask you today to consider the rituals you have. Which ones could you actually put in place that would change your classroom culture? Rituals. Rituals keep us connected. It gives your students a sense of connectedness in your classroom. For example, your morning routine probably is somewhat of a ritual for you. Isn't it? It's more than just Pull your books out. Let's turn to page number 14, and I want you to do the exercises A and B while I shuffle my papers and get myself ready. I bet you do more than that. If you've survived more than a year or two, you're going to do more than that because you'll never survive. That's how you do it. What a not nice way to start a school day, right? Students have come, and they are here. They may be there against their own wishes. Mom was going to go on a shopping trip today, and here I am in school. There's a certain sense of ritual. It is infused. It's more than just, we just do this. It is good morning. And you have things you're going to do next. One of the rituals in my classroom is I always give a few minutes, and then sometimes it expands into a few more than what I like, but I try to keep it fairly short, and you learn which students always have something to say about their evening the night before. I have this little ritual in my classroom about them talking about their evening. I do it different ways, different days. And the reason I do that is because junior high students actually have a lot on their minds. And sometimes it helps them to get rid of that stuff and tell somebody else. So they had a really exciting something that happened the night before, then they can talk to the class about this. And they feel like $1 million because now they all know this. I went to Dorn's and I bought a bow last night. You bought a bow? Wow! What kind was it? I don't hunt. I have no clue. I don't know if it's good or bad. It was a... Really? What do you plan to hunt with it? Well, I'm going to start with squirrels, and then I'm going to migrate to the deer, you know. And they have these ways of, you know, they got a plan. And they put their plan out there, and we say, that's great. You're a lucky guy, you. Who else had something? And we have an opportunity to build that connection, that rapport. And then all of a sudden it's, all right, let's pray. And then we pray. Is that an important part of a ritual? Is that a ritual? I take some time. And we pray. And when that's done, it feels like the fog has been moved out. Students are ready, and now we have Bible class. That's a ritual. My students know it happens. Not every day. Doesn't happen on Fridays when I have Bible memory. Doesn't happen on Wednesdays when we have all school chapels. But it happens Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. If I didn't do that, nothing quite works right. That tells me that it's a ritual. Something's missing here. And there are times I tell them, guys, today we're not going to talk about our evening before and the activities and things you want to share with the class. We're going to do that such and such time. Or we don't have actually time today, I'm very sorry, but we're going to have to just go right into the lesson here. And they're okay with that because they know that the next day is going to be different again. It's going to be like normal. They can roll with that. But you see, that becomes an important part of their lives. You can argue if what I do is a good idea, and I'm fine if you think it's a very bad one. I found that to be an effective way to build that rapport. Why am I taking time to do that? Because I want them to belong in my classroom. And what that means is that Tristan can't be the only guy talking about his night, of which his hand will always go up. And I'm going to have to call on Katrina. Tell me about your night. Well, we didn't do anything last night. You did nothing. Are you sure you didn't do anything? No, not really. No, just we're at home. What did you do when you're at home? Well, we played Othello for a while. You played Othello. Wow. Who won? Oh, I did. Way to go. Okay? You see what's going on here? We belong. That ritual is not just meaningless time. It has freight. It carries freight. Think about the rituals. Do any of you have rituals at recess time? A little more public expression of routines? Do you have any rituals at recess time? Turns into a routine. It's okay. We're just kind of help each other a little bit here. Do you do anything at recess that's a bit more of a ritual?
We go to the bathroom.
I hope that stays routine. Okay? And then when they get back, then what? They just get to work? Okay. So, Is there anything about lining up there that you do with the lineup? You have older students, probably not.
No, we line up.
Do you do anything in that moment as you line up? Public expression that has more meaning, doesn't it? Correct. He's infusing lining up at recess with more meaning than just lining up. It's more than a routine. You see, you all do these kinds of things. You have these things that are just as expected of you. It's a more public display. Okay, than just line up. Or it's having some fun doing some things. They know that if I'm out of line, I'm going to get my toe stomped on. That's infused with meaning. He's got a reason for doing that. And my guess is when he does that, he is not frowning at them. Okay? Lunchtime. Lunchtimes are a great time to have some rituals. Music, art, your library time. End of day. What do you do at the end of the day? Your cleaning jobs. You can even have a sense of ritual about that. Or maybe they get done with their job and they can put a check mark on the list on the door. Things that are more public expressions. They bring additional meaning and value to what we're doing. What do you do at the end of school? Rituals. They keep us connected, give us a sense of connectedness. They are infused with deeper meaning than just the routine themselves. Let's look at traditions a little bit. Traditions are significant events that have a special history and meaning and occur year in and year out in your classroom. When people have traditions they enjoy and appreciate and value, and they occur regularly, you will find you have a good foundation upon which to deal with the problems in the school year. I find traditions to be deeply enriching in the classroom. What are the things that people expect when they come into your classroom that you just do every year? What are they? What kind of art project? How was that? That work?
And, all year long.
And everybody plans to do that.
Everybody knows that. Because their mom did it, and it goes home and hangs on the wall beside the one their mom did.
You've got a tradition, brother. Do your students look forward to it?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, I thought all tradition was bad. It's boring. It's old. Stuck in the mud. Please. You still do string art after all these years. What are you going to progress anytime? Become a little more modern here?
I'd like to.
He doesn't like teaching that project. That's his issue. Okay. Look at the power of that tradition. Look at the power. Do you think they feel connected into this school? I could probably go to your homes and know who went to your school. I'd go look at the wall. How many generations are there, right? Traditions are deeply, deeply, deeply powerful. The sense of anticipation that comes with knowing what it is. Jesus did this. You know, our people tend to react to the idea of tradition. It's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. But Jesus said, you know, I want you to remember what I did for you. And I want you to wash each other's feet. I want you to break bread. I want you to drink of my blood. When you take communion, isn't that a significant event for you? Isn't there something that kind of happens? There could be other things Jesus could have asked us to do, and it would feel the same way. It's a deeply embedded part of church history and culture. And Jesus knew that the things you do, the traditions that you do, count. And so he gave us things to do because he knew it would shape church culture. It's difficult to wash the feet of some people in your church. Oh, not in yours, just mine. You know what I mean? You ever been there where it's like, oh man, you have this little flashback? Something that happened in school and you wonder, oh boy. And you have to repent of that. And when you get down there and you wash the feet of somebody else, something happens. Our traditions matter. Now, I'm not putting feet washing in just a, this is just a tradition. It's a biblical mandate. But do you follow what I'm saying? I think there's a reason Jesus did this. We have a tradition of 2 world awareness days in our school. We bring in speakers, one from afar and one from more local. And in the fall World Awareness Day, one of the things that our classroom has adopted is we go, there's a lady lives a quarter mile from the school, and she has cancer, and she's had cancer a couple of times, and we rake her leaves and do things for her. And it's interesting, I have 6th graders that ask, are we going to rake leaves for Miss Hayes? Before they come into my classroom. You see, there's a sense of connection, and I'm looking forward to coming because why? I'm so great? No. There's some traditions that draw them into what I do in the classroom. They can count on certain things. There are times, of course, when we ought to discontinue traditions in our school. They can become damaging. In our 1st and 2nd grade classroom a couple years ago, they had lots of nervous energy before a program, right? Christmas program, and they don't know what to do with themselves, and they get silly, and so Miss Yvonne has a little trampoline we use for students who need to let off excess energy, and they got this idea, kind of did it on their own, it evolved, into which they have, a stopwatch, I'm not sure, a timer, and they jump on the trampoline for 1 minute, and then it goes to the next person, they jump on the trampoline for 1 minute, and then it goes to the next person, they jump on the trampoline for 1 minute, and every time there's a program, they're going to ask that trampoline. And a timer. It emerged. You know what? Why did Yvonne not... You shouldn't be jumping on a trampoline before the program. You're going to wear yourself out. Why did she want them to jump on a trampoline? Because it wore them out. There was purpose. There's a reason she'd say, no, we're not going to do that. Could she have said that? Sure. But it was, okay, this would be a good thing, actually. And it's turned into something fun. Oh, we get to come back tonight, and for the program, we get to jump on the trampoline for a minute. The simplest things can become a part of our psyche in the classroom because of tradition. At Christmas time, do you have strong traditions at Christmas time? If families at all celebrate Christmas, then that is an area which you can create some very meaningful traditions. One of the things that I became aware of, and please, this is for our school, not for years. Let me tell you how something emerged for us. I remember when I went to school that we had Christmas exchanges between students, and you were supposed to only spend $3, $3 for a gift for someone else. You drew names out, and it was very secretive, and then, you know, someone had you, and you had somebody else, and then you had this person, and you would say, oh, boy, I have no idea what to get, and it was $3, and you about couldn't buy anything. Then you try to buy it on sale so that it would look better in the class. And then pretty soon, then the person who actually got a $3 value and the other person that got the $9 value because it was on sale, 66% off, then suddenly if you felt all these things, these tensions, right? And I remember my very worst Christmas gift I got at school was a Model A car. Model car. Should have been great. I hated model cars, especially ones you had to use cement on. They took too long to do. I prefer the snapping kind. They done. My patience is not one of my virtues, probably. And so I got this model car. It was intact 30 years later. It's still intact, except that my son's got it out of the attic and started working it, putting it together, but there's no cement with it. So it got put back in the box. I still have that model car. Still in sheets of plastic. I remember being so bummed because what I wanted, my friend got. It was one of those cap guns. I didn't get a cap gun. I got a model car. Completely ungrateful spirit. You can go ahead and analyze that. I know. But that was how it was. That's not unlike the way your students are either in these matters. And so I carried this with me. And one of the things that I've been concerned about is the consumer mentality over at Christmas time. Well, how do you fight against that? What could make our school think about some of that? So what do? We don't exchange gifts with each other. We raise money to send to the Burmese, the internally displaced people in Burma. We raised several thousand dollars. How did that one come about? It's because we had a tradition here of doing Samaritan's purse thing with a shoebox, Operation Christmas Child or whatever it was. And I think that's a neat program. We'd buy toys and all kinds of things. And they would get in this box, and I would look at all the furry things and all the things that were totally useless, actually, in my mind, when it goes to other countries where they're starving. And I thought, why are we doing this? 100 and some shoeboxes. Why? We got to talking, and through a series of events, we said, what if we took the money we put into those shoeboxes? We bought things like rice, pay for teacher salaries, pay for students to go to school in the Burmese jungle. What would happen if we did that? We raise $3,000 every year. It needs to shift now. That's kind of dying out. We're going to replace with something else. Okay? It shaped the Christmas spirit. Now we're focusing on trying to get funds to send to these people who really do need it. And they don't look at it as, oh, poor them, let's give of our excess. There are children who raise money throughout the year to give to that. Does that tradition matter in your classroom? There are so many things that we do that actually shape. Miss Byler likes to cook food to go with her history lessons. Students know if she's teaching history, you get food. What a cool tradition. I want to come. What traditions do you have? Think about that. What are the things that you can count on? Show and tell. Writing a hardcover book. Putting the art projects on the wall. There's something about things that our students can count on to be there that powerfully shape. When they no longer do that, you get rid of them. When they no longer shape appropriately, you have to quit. Fifth and sixth grade, all of our students know they're going to, in one of their years, they're going to take a trip to Central America. And they're going to be given money and passports. They're going to bring suitcases. And they're going to go on a trip. They're going to buy souvenirs. And they've got a budget to work with. They have tickets to pay for. Tradition. Do you think they look forward to that? Everything? Oh, yeah. If Miss Yoder quit doing that, there would be probably some sort of coup around here. Because that is such an embedded part of this, of even school culture. Everybody knows you do that when you go to fifth and sixth grade. Everybody knows that. Think about how that settles into the heart and the fabric of a school. Now we're not dreading the learning. There are these things, markers along the way that, oh, wow, I can't wait till. Now, daily traditions are really only rituals, and some of those are only routines. But think about your traditions in this way. What are the weekly things that you do that are more than a ritual? There's a deep-seated part that you don't really mess with. What about your monthly traditions? There's something you do every month. What about the quarterly traditions? What about the holiday traditions? What about the first day of school classroom traditions? What about the end-of-year classroom traditions? What about all of those? What traditions do you have? I'd like for you to take your paper and do a little assignment for me. And I want you to first list, I say three, list several rituals that you have in your classroom. And then I'm going to want you to choose one of those rituals and tell and write down what that accomplishes for you. So, put one or two down. We don't have a lot of time here. Put one or two down. And then find one of those. Say, well, this is the ritual, and it accomplishes what for me? What does it actually do for me in my classroom? How does it help me? Take a moment or two to do that. Don't get too philosophical with this. It doesn't have to be very highfalutin to be effective. It'd be a very practical matter what it accomplishes for you. Put your hand up when you have one of the above rituals, line number two, when you have one of those rituals identified. And keep them up. Okay, now write what it accomplishes. What does it do for your classroom culture? How does it help you? Turn and tell. Favorite part of the day, folks. Just hearing you talk. I can't really hear what you're saying, but it's what a delight. Finish this conversation later. I want you to list one tradition you have in your classroom. Just list one. And then I want you to write how it began. If you don't know what to say, say, no can do. I don't know where it came from, but it's been a part of my classroom from the previous teacher. I want you to write the tradition down and then define where it came from. Where did it start? Why did it start? Something you do that your students can count on. Every year in this classroom, we do this. I'm not checking your homework, so if you bleed into the ritual side, I'll forgive you. It can be kind of hard to think spur of the moment here about what are the traditions. I know that, but you actually have a fair number of them probably. Put your hand up when you have how it began, the tradition how it began. Put your hand up when you have that. And while you have them up, you can keep thinking about how it brings value while the rest can find their way there. I think this is a hard assignment. Okay? Now, write how it brings value. how does it help your class? What does it actually do for your classroom culture? It could be negative or positive. You realize that. I wasn't thinking negatively there, but those are very possible as well. What value does that bring? How does it shape your classroom? Y'all are getting a headache, aren't you? Thinking this hard. Put your hand up when you have the value down. Oh, good job. Good job. Turn and tell. To extend this project, develop a timeline of your classroom, a timeline of rituals and traditions for the year. Write all of those things down on your way home when someone else is driving. You tell them what are all the rituals you have in the year and all the traditions you have in the year and where they happen. And then when you have the spare time next week, then list what values and beliefs are important in each of those components. Why do they matter? You know, if you can't find anything there, you might want to reconsider putting it with something that is infused with meaning. What do the traditions represent? Extend this. You would do yourself a favor by creating a timeline of the traditions and rituals you have and then describing what they do for you. That might mean you have to create a few new ones and get rid of a few of the ones you do have. And there's ways to change tradition. Some work and some don't. Now stay with me. I've got a minute and a half. I need to tell you what I'm about to tell you. Our job as teachers is to create a culture, not react to it. Hear me. Your job is to create a culture, not react to one. The process of changing a culture is a long process often. It involves having the right and the true, our beliefs and values that come from Scripture, our heritage, etc. But where the proverbial rubber meets the road is in the routines and the rituals and traditions. That's how it's expressed. Creating a culture is an intentional process. A process in which we think carefully about what is really happening in our classrooms, not just what is happening to us in the classrooms. We've said that creating a culture requires a long look, a long-term teaching, a long-term vision. And during this process, there are two things you want to consider. That you're constantly interpreting what is positive and motivating. And you're also coming to grips with what is negative and draining. The things that are toxic. You constantly think through the grid of, how is this creating my classroom culture? What is going on? Maybe this weekend you ought to sit down and pull off a Martin Luther King Jr. I have a dream. Maybe you need to write a one-page paper, and you describe what your ideal classroom would look like. What would you hope would happen? What kind of student would you want to produce at the end of your time with them? We so often start in with no clear picture of the mind, in mind of what you want to do. And here's the thing, if you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. 100% accuracy. Step back, say, what do I hope for? What should my students be, become? Who should they be? What do I want for them? And then what can I do to help get there? And then you begin moving toward the vision. Always under authority, but always with vision. There's even a school here in this audience that I think embodies this extraordinarily well. The students have gone from asking the question, what's so good about our church, and that kind of attitude, a somewhat combative stance, to why would anyone leave this church? That's the power of a culture. That didn't come about by accident. That was a thoughtful approach. Matt and Mark, hats off. Folks, this is the power of creating a culture, not just reacting. Say, well, what's wrong with all these young people? They just have all these issues. Instead, you set about to say, what do we want? What do we care about? And you find a way to get there. It has not happened in 1 year or two or three. It is a long process through which you every year consider these kinds of questions. And when you are within that vision, you think about working out the goals of your church. You think about working out the goals of your school at large. You ask the question, am I under authority? You are an influencer. You will have more impact than the ministers of your church because of the relationship you have and the sheer volume of time spent. And that's not diminishing in any level the role of a minister and the influence of church leadership. I am saying that personally, you with the students is huge. And so you have a golden opportunity in front of you to bless our churches as you bring vibrant, godly values and beliefs and intentions to bear. These values are communicated largely through the culture that is created. Indeed, more is caught than taught. And this is the power of traditions and rituals. It speaks so we don't have to. It expresses our values so we don't have to just be talkers and speakers, but livers and doers. It speaks and expresses more concretely than the words you say. May the rituals and traditions you have in your classroom bring fruit for the kingdom.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.